Welcome to The Journey to Worthy, a feel-good podcast for women who are on a powerful journey to self-love. And wait a minute. Hold on. While most of that's true, we all know the journey is not always rainbows and butterflies. Sometimes it's really tough. That's why on this podcast, you'll hear real, raw, and mostly unedited stories about the complex journey to finding self-love. I'm your host, Rachel Spencer. After battling an eating disorder and finally realizing my own self-worth, I'm here to help you see that no matter how difficult your journey is, you've been worthy all along. Hey, lovely people, welcome back. Oh, we took a week off this past week. I had so much on my plate, but now we are back. We are better than ever. And I have somebody super special here with me. I actually asked her to be on the podcast. I don't even know if she remembers this, but I asked her to be on the podcast before I even started recording. I was thinking to myself, what kind of guests do I want on this podcast? What do I want them to talk about? Who do I already follow that I think would be a great guest? And I messaged this girl. And at the time, I think we just both had a lot going on and we never got around to recording. But here we are, 21 episodes in, and I have Miss Mia Patterson of at The Friend I Never Wanted on Instagram here with me. And we're like laughing together. We should have started recording earlier because we were like being so silly and ridiculous already. And I think you guys would appreciate that banter. But but welcome, Mia. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I am so pumped.
Me too. So just so that everybody can get a better feel for who you are, Mia is an eating disorder recovery and mental health advocate. She has spent much of the past 2 years documenting her recovery from bulimia, OCD, PTSD, and bipolar disorder on Instagram and her blog. It's her personal goal to become a therapist and work with people with eating disorders and co-occurring disorders. So I feel like that was a great intro into who you are, but Mia, if I could just kind of pass over the mic to you and you could kind of tell us a little bit about that journey and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, sure. I guess to break it down, where I'm at right now and work backwards, I currently have been on Instagram just doing my thing and posting about my life, what's going on. Lately, it's been a little bit better than it has been in the past, but I pretty much started, I think the first mental health illness that I probably had was OCD. As a little kid, I was absolutely terrified that the Power Rangers were going to break into my house and kidnap me, like irrationally afraid, never mind that the Power Rangers were the good guys.
Right.
Like, that was just like my irrational fear. And I didn't realize that was OCD until like recently. So I've been able to look back on my life and pinpoint when things kind of started more recently. And then I developed my eating disorder, not because of societal pressures for like my body or anything. I developed it because food was just an amazing coping skill. And I went through a really hard time when I was about 9 or 10. Just my dad died and my therapist at the time was not great and just a lot of things happened at once and I started coping with food. And food it was, and hiding food and eating food and basically just all the food.
Mm-hmm.
And, in 7th grade, we moved to Nebraska and it got much worse. And I think the move to Nebraska was just very devastating for me because I moved away from one of my parents. And that was probably the first time that I remember having like a major depressive episode. I just remember going to school in one pair of clothes, coming home and going to sleep in those clothes and then repeating the next day. And I just remember my grandmother being like, you just can't do this anymore. And somehow, like, I figured out a way to get myself out of it. I definitely have high functioning depression and high functioning anxiety. So I never really knew that it was a problem because I was just living my life as is, and it was hard, but I didn't realize how hard it really was. When I first got diagnosed with depression and anxiety, I was a sophomore in college. At that point, I had pretty much already decided that I had an eating disorder, but I didn't think that I really had one because I wasn't skinny like everyone else that I followed on Blogspot. Like, how old school is Blogspot?
Right.
So I just remember following girls who were very skinny and thinking they have problems. I don't really have the same problem. But once I get skinnier, then I can say that I have this problem, which is super problematic. Mm-hmm. But at the time, that's what I thought. And I pretty much just lived with my eating disorder and depression throughout college, after college. And it took me up until the last couple years to finally get diagnosed as bipolar and to get my eating disorder diagnosed and basically to figure out what was going on with me. Mm-hmm. But finally was able to do that. And I sort of documented that as I went along on Instagram. And that's what got me here.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting. The first time that I saw your account or a photo of yours in general was whenever Kinsey Brenna reposted you.
That was the photo that launched me to fame. I swear.
Right? I remember that very, very specifically because you just were glowing in the picture. Was it buying your first bikini or buying your first just swimsuit in general? What was the story behind that?
It was the first bathing suit that I had bought in 5 years. And I had not worn a bikini since I was a little kid when everyone just wore bikinis, even though we all had like tubby bellies.
Yeah.
But like no one really cared because we were like, I don't know, like four.
God, that was a great time.
It was a really great time.
Feeling nostalgic now.
Just anyway, so nostalgic. But yeah, that I remember that day in particular. I remember that I was sitting at home. It was kind of just a chill day for me. It was a quote unquote later gram. I did not go try the bathing suit on that day, but I posted it. And I remember being like, okay, I'm going to post this and then I'm going to do work. I'm going to be really productive. And I like did work for an hour and I was like, I'll just check my phone really quick. And it was just like Instagram had blown up. And I was like, I don't know what just happened. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Right? So. It's like confusing at first. Like the first time I went viral, I was like, I think there's something wrong.
Right?
Like there is a bug on my account, some sort of glitch. There's no way this is happening.
Like what are all these notifications? Who are these people?
Exactly. But why do you think that photo was so significant and led to so much engagement, so many follows, and you know, so many kind words from people?
Well, I've talked to my friend Dina about it.
I love Dina. Dina's been on this podcast, everyone. Enjoy the journey. I don't remember which episode it was, but just go back a few episodes and you'll find her. Anyway, keep going.
Oh, she's amazing. Dina's amazing. We were talking about this and we were talking about that summer. What is that? Summer 2017, and how it was just like this hotbed for like self-love and like recovery. And it was just like booming that summer. Like it was crazy. Like everyone was posting, like there was so much content flying around. Everyone, like we were doing the self-love, boot camp that Kenzie was running. And I don't know. I just remember like everything on Instagram was like flowing and just like, it was such a great place to be. And I feel like since then, it's gotten a little bit more policed and it's gotten a little bit less vibrant and creative. It's still great, don't get me wrong, but I just remember that time as just like being very sunny and like bright. And there was just like so much going on. I feel like it was just like so new for a lot of people.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I know exactly what you're talking about too. It's funny, like you're not making this up. This is not all in your head. Like you describing it, I'm like, yes, I remember that time. And actually, I'm pretty sure that's when my account went viral as well. I'm pretty sure it was summer of 2017. It was 2017. And you're so right. At that time, the, you know, self-love community in general and the recovery community, I mean, everybody was just so creative and I felt like everybody was doing something different. And like you said, it all flowed. And yeah, now like I'm seeing a lot of the same stuff and a lot of, like you said, like policing of what should and should not be posted. And it can get kind of sad and confusing compared to, you know, how we both really blew up and started our accounts, which was in such a vibrant time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sucks. But I love what you said also, how you didn't think that you had an eating disorder because you weren't the typical version of somebody who has an eating disorder. You weren't that, you know, thin, skinny little girl. Now, I want to just kind of dive into that for a second because, you know, eating disorders do not have a certain look because they're a mental illness. And I feel like a lot of people get this wrong. Can you talk about that a little bit from your experience?
Yeah, I can totally agree. Eating disorders don't look a certain way. And I think that I know that, but like, it still comes back to haunt me sometimes, like where sometimes I'm just like, but I'm not skinny, or like my gaining weight in recovery doesn't look like their gaining weight in recovery. Like, I think that like eating disorders definitely don't have a look, but they're just so perceived to be like for thin white girls. Mm-hmm. And that is the only people who can supposedly have them. And that's so problematic because a majority of people with eating disorders are either at a normal, quote unquote, normal weight or above. And so not even the majority of people are thin white girls. And you've got people of color, you've got people who are disabled, you've got trans people, you've got like every color under the sun.
Yeah.
And so many of them are not represented. And I think what's really problematic is for me, especially coming to the community, looking for people to look up to in the recovery community, there just wasn't that. Like there wasn't a fat black girl who was in recovery. There was no one for me to look up to like that. And even now I get frustrated with the fact that it seems that most large recovery accounts are of thin white women, which just perpetuates the ideal that that's what eating disorders look like. And I feel like we need to be like supporting people of color in recovery and disabled people in recovery and trans people in recovery, because they need to have bigger accounts that people who look like them can find them. Because it's so hard to find people on Instagram if you don't know where to look.
Yeah. Oh my God. Absolutely. And you know, it's kind of cool. Like you're creating your own path. You're like paving your own way, because now, you know, I think that's what makes you so special is you have become that person for other girls that you needed, you know, like, I mean, I'm really, really proud of you just seeing your growth and seeing how, I mean, I look up to you as well, but I mean, especially, you know, younger, you know, fat black women who are like, oh my God, thank you. There is somebody out there who is speaking my language, who, you know, looks like me and who understands that, you know, I can still have an eating disorder, even though I don't look like all these other women, you know, and that she'll believe me.
Yes. And I think also, like, especially because it's Need a Week this week, I got a chance to talk to Shavice. I don't remember her last name, but She is the chief strategy officer, I believe, at NIDA now. She originally started BIDA, the Binge Eating Disorder Association, which is now merged with NIDA. And I was talking to her about how she has set down a precedent at NIDA that they cannot just be only hiring thin white women at NIDA. Like, NIDA needs to step up and be representative of what recovery looks like too.
Yes, preach. Preach. Absolutely. How did she take that?
No, that was what she wants. That is what she wants.
Yes.
So,
oh my God, that makes me even happier.
And she was basically saying, like, if there is a person of color who has the same experience as a white person, to definitely take the person of color.
Ugh.
Just to diversify NIDA.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I thought you were saying that you were bringing that to her attention. The fact that she was saying that to you, that makes me so, so happy.
Yes. Yes. And she is a fat woman too. So she understands that, but she is white, but she is fat. So
yeah,
she understands what marginalization is.
Yeah. Well, talk to us more about, you know, just really quickly, the word fat. Because I know that, you know, I've had somebody on the show before where we talked about how fat is not a bad word. I guess depending on how you use it, because some people say it in a mean and ugly way, but it really is just a descriptor. But whenever other people in the ED community or maybe the self-love community come out and try to support fat women, I know a lot of people tend to swarm and say, oh, you can't call people fat and yada, yada. And that further, you know, again, perpetuates the idea that it is a bad word. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
I mean, fat is just a descriptor. It's like you have blue eyes or you have brown hair or you're thin or, I don't know, you're tall, you're short. It's just a descriptor. But it's taken on this like meaning of like ugly and lazy and slobbish and just like not pretty and unathletic. And it has all of these other hidden meanings that give it so much negative weight. And for me, like, I always did the thing where I would call people overweight or obese. But I mean, like, one thing that was powerful for me is like, what weight is overweight? Like, what is that weight that we're talking about? And BMI is just complete bullshit. So, like, why are we living our lives around BMI and what tells us we're at a normal weight or not a normal weight? Like, I have been overweight by BMI since I was a kid and I was just athletic. Like, so fat is just a word that I've taken back for myself that I know that it might make other people cringe, but it doesn't make me cringe anymore. There was actually this phase when I was in elementary school where I tried to make fat, P-H-A-T, like a thing. Remember?
I remember.
Things fat, and I'd be like, that's so fat. And everyone would be like, Nia, stop it. Like, and I was like, just trying to make it happen. So like, clearly I've been trying to be like proactive since a very young age.
That is amazing. Stop trying to make fat happen.
It's my Mean Girls moment.
Right. Oh my God. That's amazing. Well, going back to your work with NIDA, yes, as we are recording this, it is NIDA week, which is amazing. We can raise awareness for eating disorders. And you have just recently started doing some work with them. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, I actually can, because this will premiere after the project that I'm not supposed to talk about comes out. So that's fine. I got flown out to LA about a week and a half ago by Instagram and NIDA to participate in a video for NIDA Week about what Come As You Are looks like, what that means, what, like, at what point did I start feeling like I was authentic on Instagram, which was coincidentally the Kenzie photo that Kenzie reposted. That was the photo. And it was like a 45-minute video shoot, and then they did headshots and other photos, which was amazing. It was just like star treatment, and they put me up in this fancy hotel, and it was amazing. It was the most amazing 2 days ever. And then for Nita Week, they featured me on their page, and I'm supposed to be writing a blog post in the next couple days as well.
But you're talking to me instead.
Clearly. I am doing so much work.
Right. Oh my God. That is so amazing though. You guys couldn't see my face, but I was literally like tearing up. Like, come as you are. Like, that is such a powerful, powerful statement. When is that video going to come out? Like you said, by the time
it
comes out, people will have seen it, but tomorrow. So Tuesday.
Tuesday the 26th.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for you.
I know they're supposed to send it to me tonight, so I get to see it finally. But photos they sent me were amazing. So I'm all excited about those.
Oh my God, I can't wait to see. Plus new Instagram content, right?
Always. Do it for the gram.
Do it for the gram. Well, I want to switch gears here and kind of go back to whenever you said that your goal was to eventually become a therapist, and I think that that's incredible. Where did your passion for that come from?
So actually, I find this hilarious. Originally, when I was about 7 years old, I decided that I was going to become a therapist. I had this, I guess it was a strange relationship with my therapist. She was like probably the one person that I trusted as a kid, and I'd been seeing her since kindergarten, and she was amazing. We never once had a conversation in 6 years, but like, I loved her. Like, she was great. And I secretly decided that I wanted to become a therapist because I liked her.
Oh, wow.
But I specifically remember being like, I can't tell anyone because then they'll think that I like her.
Oh.
So I like wanted to be a therapist from when I was like a little kid, and then I went through so many other job prospects and variations of what I wanted to do, and I wanted to go to medical school, I wanted to be a forensic anthropologist, like every kid goes through everything they want to do, and then as you go to college you have to think about what you want to do. And eventually I didn't go to medical school. It was going to be too expensive just to apply. So I took some time off after college to quote unquote find myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up finding some really questionable jobs and living with some interesting people and just kind of, I guess, finding myself. Just it wasn't glamorous like I thought it was going to be.
Right. Like whenever people think of find yourself, I feel like they think of like eat, pray, love, like go travel to Bali, like have your best life, the best.
And eat a ton of pasta.
Right. Exactly. Which, I mean, that's the dream, obviously. Pizza.
I mean, I didn't eat a lot of pasta, but like I really should have.
Right. But people think it's this glamorous thing. And it's like, no, trying to find yourself is really freaking hard.
It actually is. And I don't think that I realized that I was doing it so much as like things would just kind of like fall in my path.
Yeah.
And like I'd kind of get lucky sometimes. And I kind of got lucky when I found the first eating disorder support group that I went to, which was the first time that I admitted to myself that I had an eating disorder.
Wow.
And I just sort of fit in with the group. And it felt very comfortable. And there was one girl in group who was very dominant, and she disappeared after a little while. And I kind of felt like I had to step up and be a voice in the group. And by doing that, people sort of like would come to me for advice and would want my opinion on things. And I sort of became like one of the other facilitator therapists in the group.
Mm.
And then I took that with me when I went to treatment. And throughout, everyone would always be like, Nia, you're basically a therapist. Like, Nia, you're doing the therapist's job. Like, you would be such a good therapist. And I was like, well, maybe I could listen to them and that's like what I should do. Like, maybe that's what I need to be doing. And so it kind of came back full circle to being 7 years old and wanting to be a therapist, but this time being more informed about what that meant.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, I love that story. That's so cool. It all did come full circle. I feel like I had the same experience. Well, no, rewind. It was not the same experience. I did not go full circle and decide that I wanted to be something from when I was younger. But what I mean is that you mentioned like forensic anthropologists and like all these other like, you know, wacky like kid dreams. Like I remember I was like, oh yeah, like I'm going to be a climatologist and study the weather. And then I was like, no, forget it. Like I want to be on screen. I want to be a weather woman. And then I wanted to like go, wait, I'm like totally blanking on the name, but I wanted to go like dig up, dinosaurs. Yes, an archaeologist. Go. Ooh, words are hard. I was like, I'm going to be an archaeologist for sure. And then for I went to school for acting.
Of course. Of course.
It was like, wow. But anywho, so, okay, so you dealt with bulimia, OCD, PTSD, and bipolar disorder. Are any of those things stuff that you still deal with today?
Yes, I deal with all of it. Mm-hmm. I think of mental illness as something that you just live with. I guess it sounds kind of bad, but like once your brain gets sick, it's never going to get fully better. It's something that you're just going to live with. And I don't mean that in like a negative way. I think that because of my mental illnesses, I'm able to see the world in a different light and I'm able to take things on a different way. And I feel like without my mental illnesses, I would be in probably a very different place right now.
Yeah.
But I definitely deal with everything today and to different degrees, all of it. I'm still in therapy. Mm-hmm. I still see a psychiatrist. My mental health is very important to me. So,
yeah. It's very true what you said, though, about how we, it's kind of something that we always deal with, because that's how I feel about recovery as well. Because although I am in recovery, I always say like I'm in strong recovery or I'm still in recovery, because I feel like when people say that they're recovered, it's like there's something, there's like a standard to live up to. And then if somebody relapses, there's like so much shame around it. You know,
I personally don't believe in the concept of full recovery.
Yeah.
One of my therapists who is in recovery themselves told me that for her, it's like there's a TV in the background and now the TV's turned down really low, but she can still kind of hear it, but it's not as loud as it was when she was in her eating disorder.
Oh, wow.
But when the sound starts getting louder, she knows that something's up and that she needs to start taking care of herself. And she needs to be aware of like what is changing in her life and what is going on that is bringing up those thoughts again.
Wow. Wow. That's a really good visual.
Right?
Dang. That really says it all. That's very, very clear. I love that so much. So going back to Instagram, and you talk about mental health and eating disorders and stuff like that all the time. I mean, I love reading your account because, I mean, there's clearly some, you know, funny humor and charm in there every once in a while, but I really like that everything you post kind of teaches me something. And more specifically, I feel like I am slowly trying to become a, you know, better ally to, you know, people in marginalized bodies. And I don't know if that would have even been brought to my attention if it weren't for accounts like yours. So just for all of our listeners, do you have just some basic things from your experience that you would appreciate from people in order for them to be better allies to, you know, fat people or people in marginalized bodies in general?
I think that for anyone in an agent identity, which means that you are in a position of power, because to be a target identity, you suffer from a system of power, but also from prejudice. So to be an agent identity, I think that the number one thing that anyone can do is listen, because you're not going to know what that experience is like if you're not listening to people who are going through it. Mm. And I think that you can never listen or learn too much, because there's always going to be someone else's experience. There's always going to be something that one person has gone through that not everyone else has gone through, and you're not going to know that. And I think that that is probably the most important thing, is to listen. In terms of being like a fat ally, I guess one thing, I guess if you have friends who are fat, especially friends who are like larger fat people, is to be conscious of what you're making plans for. Like, don't make plans to go to like an amusement park because your fat friend is going to feel a ton of anxiety over if they're going to fit on the rides or what they're going to be doing while you're riding the rides. And also just like, if you do go to some place where they're not going to fit and they're telling you it's fine, do they really mean that? Are you actually listening to if they're actually okay? Another thing is, if you're going to like a conference or an event, or if you're hosting a conference or an event, making sure that you have sturdy seating, because you don't want a chair to collapse under a fat person. That is just one of the most embarrassing things that can happen. Mm-hmm. And just being aware of that. And even if like you're a friend and you're going out to dinner, being aware of if they're going to sit you in a booth and your friend can't fit in the booth, that sort of thing. Because a lot of thin people don't think about that. They just automatically sit where the waitress puts them. And I think as like a fat person who has started advocating for themselves, like there is a point where I am now willing to say, can we sit at a table or can we not sit there?
Good for you.
But prior to like the last year, I would not have been comfortable doing that. So being able to stand up for your friends and do things like that, and just being aware, doing research, learning, all of that.
And see, those are such simple little shifts that I feel like anybody can make. And I feel like sometimes we just make it too hard for ourselves. We're like, well, I don't know what to do. And it's like, okay, how hard is it to, you know, check in with your fat friend, to see what the seats are like where you're going, to, you know, make sure that the events you're planning are welcome to, you know, all body types. I mean, it's so, so simple, and we just make it so much more difficult. And I think on, you know, social media as well, one thing that, you know, I think we could definitely do better is center the voices of marginalized bodies a lot more often.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
There's definitely a lack of that, because like you were saying earlier in the conversation, you know, all of these big recovery and self-love and quote unquote body positive accounts, which we'll get to that in a second, are these like thin white women, you know, with hundreds of thousands of followers. And it's like, okay, that's great, you know, no hate, but I feel like it is our duty, especially if we're, you know, labeling our page as, you know, intersectional and body positive. I mean, come on, you need to be centering those voices and kind of handing over the mic to them.
And I think that also is something that was a little bit bigger in the summer of 2017, is that there were more big accounts posting other people's content. Mm. Not so much now. I think there's a lot less posting now in general, but there's a lot less posting of other people's content.
What do you think changed?
I'm not totally sure.
Yeah.
I think that some people changed what their pages were about. Some people changed what their perspectives were. Yeah. I just think that, I mean, also, I think people can now share to their story more
right.
than when it was just like Instagram, you only could repost to another post.
Oh, that is so true, actually. It's just like reposting to the story really quickly so you can kind of keep your feed to yourself.
Yeah.
I can think about that as well.
Yeah.
So let's kind of dive into that body positivity versus self-love subject really quickly. I feel like self-love is confused, or excuse me, body positivity is confused for self-love a lot of the time.
100%.
Yeah, like 100% and 98% of the time. I'm like, do you see how I'm like trying to choose my words carefully? Because I'm like, oh God, this is going to be an unpopular topic. But like, it needs to be said, okay?
I get so many angry DMs whenever I talk about this.
Right? I'm like, okay, how do I put this kindly? You are not a body positive account. You're a self-love account.
Even the other day, I was on YouTube and someone was like, I think that I've earned being a body positive activist. And she is like a size 10. And I was just like, how do I tell you no?
Could she call herself or anybody in that position a body positive ally?
Ooh, I've not heard that terminology, but
I'm just curious if people, you know, could say like, yes, I support the body positive movement. I am an ally, but to say that I am body positive would not be true.
Yes. I think that I've heard fat ally more than I have heard body positive ally, but I think that the terminology works.
Yeah. So what's the difference in your opinion between body positivity and self-love?
So I think that the main confusion is between positive body image and body positivity. So body positivity is a social justice movement that was started by a fat black femme who I don't remember her name, but she was a fat black femme and she started body positivity for others who were fat and black and who were not cis. And it started that way. It was for, and then fat activism also came into play, which is like a whole nother field altogether. Mm-hmm. And so body positivity is a social justice movement for the representation of marginalized bodies. And marginalized bodies do not solely mean fat people. That means fat people, people of color, trans people, disabled people. It is such a broader category, and I don't think people know that. It's not like I'm looking in the mirror and squishing my stomach and I look really cute. It's literally to get respect for people who are put down by systems of power, who lose jobs, who physically cannot fit in our world. Like even the stupid plastic straw ban that affects disabled people, that is a body positive issue. It's just so much bigger than just standing in the mirror and loving what you see or even liking what you see.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. I think self-love and body acceptance go along hand in hand, because accepting of your body as it is, everyone needs that.
Yeah.
We live in a society that tells us to hate ourselves for like a million things every day. Like you just can't win.
Yeah.
And so having body acceptance and just accepting yourself as you are, regardless of what happens, regardless of if you're fat or thin or tall or short or whatever eye color you have, basically just accepting yourself. Everyone needs that. That is so important. And when people message me and say like, what about skinny shaming? And I've been skinny shamed. I should be body positive. I'm like, you definitely get body acceptance. You get self-love, and people should not shame you for your body in general. But that doesn't mean that you're part of the body positive movement.
Yes.
And then, I mean, of course, within that too, there are just all these hierarchies, all these levels. For example, a white fat woman has more privilege over a black fat woman, who has more privilege over a Latinx fat trans woman. It's just, there's so many levels in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw you posted something that said, there is no body positivity without fat people, and there is no fat positivity without social justice. And that was from Nicole McDermott.
Yes. The embodied therapist, I think, is her account.
Yeah. And I saw that you reposted that, which is where, you know, where this kind of conversation came up for me. But I've actually been blocked before by a very well-known self-love account.
Oh, no.
I bet you know which one I'm talking about, but I'm not going to name names on here because that's just not who I am. But she posted just like a ranting post to her, like, she probably has like 300,000 followers. God, I don't know. And it was like a ranting post of how it's so stupid that people tell her she can't be body positive and body positivity is for everyone, literally everyone. And just went on a rant, and I left a little comment that was like, "Hi, love you, love your account, but body positivity is not the same thing as self." But like, just like, was like very kind with my comment.
I thought though, like, the block. You can't just like go in and be like, "This is what you're doing, and this is how it's wrong." Like, you have to go in and be like, "I love you. I love your account." You have to like talk them down because like you know they're gonna get mad. Right. I have gone into so many people's DMs and just been like, "This is what you're doing, and this is problematic." And I'm more comfortable doing it if it's someone that I know. But at the same time, like, calling people in is way more important than calling people out. And yeah. I think that if you like go into someone's DMs, they're a little less violent about it because it's not super public.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're able to like better reason with them a little bit.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're just not going to win.
For sure. Well, I definitely learned my lesson because I was real offended. I'm like, what? I was trying to be nice and help you out. but I've seen so many large accounts, you know, ever since then where that conversation is going on nonstop of people just saying, you know, body positivity is for everyone. But like, not even in like a light way. They're like ranting against people who are kindly trying to tell them otherwise. I mean, why do you think people get so defensive? Like, why can't they just listen and be like, okay, now I understand what the movement, you know, the political social movement it is. And now I'll focus on self-love. Like, why is that so hard? Because that actually happened with me.
Look at white men when you tell them what a feminist is. They get pissed that they're not part of the movement, so they just hate feminists. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Like, everyone wants to be part of this movement because it's a great thing to be in. It's great to love your body. That's what everyone thinks it is. And then they're getting told, no, you can't love your body. At least that's what they're hearing.
Right.
And that's not what anyone's trying to say, but that's what they're hearing. And to them, especially if they're in recovery, where they have fought for loving their body, they're taking it as a personal slight, and they're not listening. They're not trying to learn. They are just spewing back exactly what their first reaction is.
That's so, so true. And, you know, even at the beginning of, you know, my account, I was labeled by the media as body positive without me even
saying. I called you out on that.
Yeah, I was getting to that. So the media was calling me body positive before I even knew what it was. I was just like, I was like, heck yeah, like I'm part of this movement of loving your body. Like I had no idea what I was doing. I was just so excited to be mentioned in all these magazines, right? And so I'm just like, yeah, I'm the new body positive babe. I'm like so excited. And then you weren't actually the first person who said that to me. I actually think it was Dina, to be truthful. Like, I don't even remember, but basically somebody was like, do you know what body positivity actually is? And I was like, but I actually listened. I was like, no, tell me more. And then I was like, oh my God, like I felt so bad. I almost felt guilty. And then I was labeled a body positive influencer by Very Well magazine. And I posted just because, you know, it was such an honor. And then Nia is in my DMs and she's like, this is great, but I just want to let you know. I just want to let you know that that title is problematic. And at first I was like, how dare this girl come into my DMs? But like, the reason I was defensive is because I was like, I know. I was like, I know that like, this is not right. Like, I didn't write this article, but that doesn't matter. Like, I have a voice here and I need to speak up about it, which is why I like made a big Instagram story about it. And from then on out, I was like, don't call me body positive. But I appreciated that call out because see, that was needed.
Yeah. See, now there if, I go, just sliding into people's DMs.
I know. But now if only...
warrior weapons.
Yeah. Now if only other people would just listen and then invite you on their podcast.
Like, I definitely... It depends on the day, like, or the mood. But, like, there will be days when people will, like, message me and I will just... I just, like, am on thin ice and I am just, like, not ready to deal with that. And a lot of times I will just go to articles about body positivity and just start copying, pasting, and just messaging them and like won't stop. And I'm like, you could just read all this material.
Right. Google.
People try and like come after me with like, everyone gives me the Wikipedia page for body positivity. Everyone gives me that.
Right.
And I take from other articles that talk about how body positivity is a social justice movement. It's for marginalized bodies. And I send them that. And some people read it. Some people listen. Some people learn. Some people just stay stuck where they're at and just don't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you have a favorite article? I mean, maybe not on hand, but I can add it in the show notes. To educate our listeners.
I could probably find one. I believe that Yours Truly, Melly.
Yours Truly, Melly
wrote one. I would have to look, but
well, guys, I'll put it in the show notes. Don't worry, we will get it. We will find it. Well, ooh, I'm like that took us to a really serious note, but I felt like it really needed to be said, and I've been wanting to come on here and kind of touch on this subject, but I just felt like it was wrong. Someone in, you know, a thin white woman, you know, somebody who's a thin white woman coming on here and talking about that. I was like, I feel like this is the perfect time to center somebody else and have them come on and, you know, talk about what it really means. So thank you so much for diving into that with me.
Oh yeah.
Now, Nia, I always ask every single person before we finish our interview, if they could give one piece of advice to our listeners who are struggling with their self-love journey or with their mental health issues, what is one piece of advice that you would give them? No pressure.
Advice.
Yeah, all of the advice. No, just one. Simple
all of the things.
Advice.
Do all of the things.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think I want to say that one of the most important things that I've learned is it's okay to ask for help. And I think there was a point where I thought that was the stupidest thing ever. I was like, duh, it's okay to ask for help. I know this. Like, I just don't need help. Like,
right.
That was the thought. Might have been wrong, but I think that asking for help looks so different, and it's not even necessarily asking for help, but it's asking for what you need. My grandmother and I tend to butt heads on like 90% of our conversations and lives, and I remember there was one conversation where we were just not getting anywhere. And I just wanted to rant about something and she wanted to fix it. And I didn't need her to fix it right then. I just needed her to listen. And I was just like, I really just need you to listen to me and not try and fix this. And she was like, okay, I can do that. But you have to be able to know what you need. And I think that there are so many things that we need and we're so strong and we do it on our own all the time that it's even hard to identify what those things are that we do need. And so I think sitting down, thinking through what would help you, whether that's therapy, whether that's a hug, whether that is just like tea or a snack, or if it's someone to listen, or if you need advice, being able to sit down, figure out what it is, and then figure out who best in your life it is to ask for that help from. I think that would be my number one thing at this moment.
Yes.
It might change tomorrow.
She is a future therapist, though, so I'm sure she has a lot to say.
So you should follow me because I might post something else tomorrow. But
yes, no,
that's what I got for you today.
I love that, though. That's like a breakdown. It's not just like, yeah, ask for help. You're like, no, here's how I believe you can best do that. So thank you. Speaking of following you, where can people find you? Actually, first, can you just really quickly tell us about your Etsy shop?
Yeah. So I am a diehard planner girl. Yes. I said planner, like day planner.
Yes.
I pretty much since like 2015, I have been obsessed with stickers.
Oh my God. I love stickers.
I love stickers. Like, it's not even funny how many stickers I have in my house right now. It is a problem. It is a big problem. And then I have commitment issues to putting stickers down because then like, what if you want to put, I do not have scratch and sniff ones.
Oh, that's
actually, no, I might have some, but I just like, I don't like putting stickers down because then what if you find a better place to put them? Like, it's very serious. So absolutely obsessed with stickers. And so in 2016, I got fired from a job and I had a machine that I had asked for Christmas and I started making stickers and I started my Etsy shop to make planner stickers, which I've been doing for a few years now, but more recently I started making self-love, body positive, self-care stickers, which are actually probably my best-selling stickers now.
Oh, wow.
But if you want to check those out, my Etsy shop is the Dapper Dolphin, because what other animal is dapper besides dolphins? I mean, come on. But yeah, that is where you can check out my art and my stickers and yeah, pretty much.
Awesome. And where can people find you and connect with you?
If you want to find me, it's not that hard. You can follow me at The Friend I Never Wanted. You can follow me on Facebook. You can follow me on Instagram. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I do not tweet very often, so I don't suggest it, but I retweet some pretty awesome stuff. It is NiaMarie_33. And also my blog, which I just updated, is thefriendineverwanted.com. And also, if you want to keep hanging out with me and you want more one-on-one attention and personalized support, you can follow my Patreon, also at The Friend I Never Wanted. So find me somewhere, hit my DMs if you want to chat.
Amazing. Everybody should. Everybody should want to chat with you. Go follow you. Thank you so much for being here with me.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me.
That was so fun. All right. And to all of our listeners, thank you so much for letting us be part of your journey. Thank you so much for listening. If you loved this episode, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a beat. And if you really loved it, I'd be so grateful if you'd leave me a positive review on iTunes. For more self-love inspo, body acceptance, and mental health support, come follow me over on Instagram. You can find me at MyCoachRachel. See you next time.